Dead in Goal NRL podcast for round 20. My name's James Smith, and beside me is Jeff Centenera. How are you, mate?
I'm good, James. How are you?
very, very well. We thought we'd be discussing post-origin action, but...
It never ends.
Yeah, it never ends. It's just decided to go into extra time, the controversy surrounding origin, particularly related to the losing side. So it's the gift that keeps on giving, isn't it, State of Origin?
Certainly is. What would we talk about in the middle of the year? I guess we'd talk about club football in the middle of the year if it weren't for Origin to come around. But we can't get away from it, isn't it? We're very much into the circular firing squad portion of, yeah, of the Origin breakdown, and breakdown, I guess, is the operative word to what happened to kind of New South Wales over the past week.
Yeah, the blame game is just firing up. So in this week's episode, we're going to be discussing the supposed myth, all of a sudden, that is the Blues origin culture. We're going to be talking about something called flag footy, and more so what the NRL can do in relation to something that flag footy has done in terms of reaching maximum exposure. You'll learn what we're actually talking about shortly. But we're also going to have a yarn about Penrith star Nathan Cleary slash origin generational change, so that should be interesting. We'll have a look at our hero of the week, our zero of the past week. We'll actually have a look at some NRL matchups as well. And we're going to start counting down to the World Cup at the end of the year by looking at that there are actually a number of World Cups being played, and a few of them were decided over the weekend. We're going to take a trip down memory lane in our rearview mirror segment related to that legendary referee, Greg Hartley. And then we'll finish with a preview of our August 2017 edition of Inside Sport, and it's another great edition that we're very proud of. So, but Jeff, to kick off, we've been talking about this for 3 days now at work. It seems to be very distracting. The Blues origin culture and how it's just basically been poisoned by A, team selections, and B, player behaviour.
Yeah, my antennae always kind of go up when a team, having just sustained a loss, and a disappointing loss at that, suddenly starts pointing out, kind of how bad their culture is, and how their culture has contributed to their losing status. I think it has become a too easy catch-all for kind of winning teams to kind of lord how great their culture is, and for losing teams to just kind of blame it, just pull it out and blame it. I really do believe that the two main stories that have come out of the Blues camp over the past week really have a really distinct ring of that idea that, they're just looking for a culprit, and culture seems to become the culprit. I have the really distinct feeling that if New South Wales had come away with victory in Game 3, we wouldn't be talking about these stories at all.
Oh, definitely. And as you've said, how was the culture leading up to and after Game 1? Mm. There was no discussion at all about culture, was there? And and if you're going to talk about culture and winning and losing records and stuff, how bad must the culture be at the West Tigers? Oh, well, that's debatable. but especially in Newcastle, are we saying that because they're losing week in, week out, that they've got a terrible culture? You'd argue that their culture is pretty good from the outside, wouldn't you? So I agree with you. The blame game seems to have fired right up, and these two incidences are it.
I certainly think that, one of the things that's become evident to me in kind of following teams in a number of sports is you have clubs that have really, really good culture that don't win. That is a kind of a realistic scenario as well. And then you have teams that can kind of win in spite of their culture. I mean, you see some teams that are absolutely riven by internal dissension, and players who don't like each other, and players who don't like their coaches.
Manly seems to be a good one, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Boardroom's always in crisis.
Exactly. Yeah. You get certain player groups that tend to thrive on siege mentality, and you would think that that's not, kind of the best way to kind of set up a culture, but for some teams it really, really works. And for that kind of, maybe it's the personality of the playing group. I mean, they just tend to, they can really thrive in those scenarios.
Yeah.
But there's an idea, James, that you kind of, you told me that I really, really like. Because just going back to these two, the two main narratives that kind of emerged about kind of the blues culture, that being kind of the latest excellent adventure of Dougs and Blake, you know, that fun couple that, you know, kind of dating back to the rooftop in Canberra. And then also kind of what Andrew Fifita said to Laurie Daly and vice versa. These have been the two kind of main threads that have emerged.
Yeah.
And like, it was interesting kind of when we were kind of discussing this, which one is the more serious, which one is the more kind of just juicy, really?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Kind of how do they actually relate to each other? I thought you had a really kind of good, very political thought about this.
Oh dear, you make me say it. Yes. Well, to me, the Dugan Ferguson booze up, supposed 8-hour booze up, just grog fest 5 days out from a game, that's just a complete, I can't believe it's a story. I've been following the game for so long, we can't on one hand call it a working class beer sport, then on the other you know, turn around and blame the whole loss on these two dudes. I on my parody Winfield Cup account, I'd put up a picture of Tommy Radonikis and made him and made up a quote on his behalf saying, so 8 hours on the drink, 5 days before a game, like, what's the punchline here? Like, what's the, is there anything else, or is that all that happened? And what I think, to answer your question in a long way about it, this seemed to come along about 30 minutes or an hour after the explosive Andrew Fifita versus David Clemmer.
Which you regarded as more serious.
Yeah, definitely. That's the main issue here. The fact that, well, supposedly Fifita has blown up after being told that he's going to be starting from the bench in Origin 3 sacrificing his spot for David Clemmer. He wasn't very happy about that, so Laurie Daly has reverted back to putting Fifita in the starting lineup. That I can imagine, if you're in that squad and you've seen the coaching staff or selectors bow down to a single player, that would be pretty fractious.
Fractious.
I'll learn how to speak English one day. I'm getting well. I'm getting better.
It's a rugby league word. Fractious.
Fractious. Yeah, that to me seemed to me the a really damaging episode or fallout to come out of it. And it just seemed a little bit too convenient for me that this trivial booze fest came up just at the exact same time. Like just before I finish here, are we saying that nothing happened between, nothing happened as far as people chasing stories between Wednesday and last Sunday? Like, nothing happened, and then all of a sudden we have these two explosive stories arriving at the same time. Like, what do you reckon?
I tend to agree. I mean, yeah. I think the thing about Dugan and Ferguson is that it is kind of very, it's salacious. I mean, they had prior form, you know, and it's just an easy kind of knock to kind of put on somebody in a loss.
Yeah.
Even though, if you know, if you read kind of any of the detail that's emerging, it didn't seem like they were kind of really doing anything at all. They just were kind of having a day off, as they're entitled to, you know, and the coaching staff knew, and they weren't too aggrieved about it.
No.
But you know, because it's, you know, Ferguson and Dugan, I think it became a thing.
Yeah.
As you say, I think the Fifita's challenge to Daly's authority, or if that is indeed kind of what happened, it is far more serious, because it speaks to kind of the dynamic, and perhaps the problem dynamic kind of within the Blues locker room. And then that does kind of really speak to a culture issue. But it's interesting how, you know, we were just talking about you know, Fifita, who we profiled in a previous edition of Inside Sport, and the thing that we were kind of really lauding kind of him for is, you know, he is a very plain talker. He shoots straight. I don't think he minces words, and it's gotten him into a lot of trouble both on and off the field, you know, in his career. And I wonder if kind of he did the same again here. But you know, and it kind of upset kind of the way kind of the internal harmony of kind of the New South Wales Origin side.
Yeah, and there's a massive context to all this. If they had a one, then there's no way we'd learn anything about the Dugan Ferguson booze up. It would have been absolutely a non-issue. It would have been just something that happened in the camp through the week. So. Yeah, that's our take on it. Next, we want to talk about something we both saw on Twitter last week or on Monday.
Well, you saw it and you alerted me to it.
Yeah, like when you call Twitter up on your computer screen, it gives you a lot more than what you get on your phone, and you get a little prompt down in the corner of your screen about events that Twitter is broadcasting live. And this caught my eye that they were broadcasting the NFL. Off-season sport of flag football, is it?
Football.
Yeah. Yeah, it's basically what were they called? The rugby league.
Oztag.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to grab the tag out of the guy's shorts to stop the play, and we weren't too much focusing on the actual game itself, but just the concept of an off-season thing that was gaining massive exposure on social media, just to keep the sport of NFL in the airwaves, weren't we? Like, we were both really impressed, and we got to thinking, maybe this could be something that the NRL could do, like the same sort of concept in the off-season.
Well, you know, one of my hobby horses, as you know, that I've had for a while, is like when the NRL made its acquisition of Touch Football.
Yeah,
I was very excited. I thought this is a genius idea. I thought, you know, this is the thing that, you know, the NRL can use to connect its brand to the masses. When you get down to it, it's always going to be a difficult proposition for rugby league. It's a very kind of vigorous and oftentimes brutal game to be a very widely played mass participation sport. But, you know, but touch, you know, people love to play touches. You know, it's a very kind of popular game. You know, both sexes.
Yeah.
You know, kind of can play, you know, played in your lunch hour by the office crowd. You know, it's a lot of different age ranges. You know, it is kind of, I think, you know, the league's answer to kind of it's kind of, to use a bad term, a gateway drug. But I always kind of, just looking at the way that flag football kind of deal was set up. I mean, they were using kind of, you know, prominent ex players, kind of, you know, kind of using like, yeah, Twitter and streaming through Twitter, which I think is kind of a real genius way to get small sports, you know, kind of greater exposure, because you just could kind of trip over it, like as you're kind of, you know, scrolling through your feed. It got me thinking that, you know, one of the things we keep on talking about with the NRL is the need to kind of create other content, particularly if they want to condense the season or they want to go to standalone origin weeks, or
definitely
kind of create things around the game that, you know, kind of are league related yet are not necessarily kind of the games themselves, because I think the market is probably overserved for club matches. And this struck me as the kind of thing that they could do. Like, who wouldn't want to watch, say if we did have a standalone origin week, who wouldn't want to watch kind of a quick fire, maybe day long or 2 day long carnival style kind of touch tournament, in which you could have, like, you know, a bunch of pickup squads, maybe get a team of the best female players in Australia and have them go against a bunch of, you know, legendary kind of like prop forwards. Like, who wouldn't want to watch that?
It's the sort of thing that Anthony Mundine could collect a bunch of Indigenous all-stars.
Absolutely.
Yeah, play touch or two-handed touch or whatever.
Mm.
Yeah, it's but it's just you know, there's no dead space anymore in sport, is there? Or you can't really afford to have dead space. And this sort of a similar thing would fill the summer months perfectly, wouldn't it, for NRL?
Yeah, I mean, that's always been the question, isn't it? That the reason why they can't kind of condense the schedule, or, you know, kind of go down the path of enhancing player welfare that way, is because, you know, there's the thought that kind of the television partners, who commit a lot of kind of resources to, you know, to the league, you know, to have kind of content, to have material to show on kind of on their airwaves, they need stuff to show, and yeah. This is the kind of thing that that they could do, I would think. And admittedly, maybe it's a bit of a leap to just kind of put this on air, but it kind of hasn't escaped me that the success of the Nines, I've always been curious, is it because of the play of the Nines itself, or is it really kind of the other kind of factors around it, which is to say, is it because it's held at the time of year when people are desperate for kind of league content, so is it pent up excitement for the start of the season and so forth? Yeah. Is it the fact that they put every fan base in the comp into yeah. a stadium for two straight days in Auckland, you know? Is it the fact that, you know, you do get to see more of a range of kind of exciting young players and maybe the odd club legend? You know, I think, you know, there are a lot of kind of things that go into it that kind of make it as compelling as it is. And having just said all these complimentary things about the Nines, they're brand it for next year because I guess they have to. I mean, you know, it's going to be a very long season with the World Cup.
But as you were saying, if they used other athletes, celebrity athletes, former legends, you know, Corey Parker, who wouldn't want to keep him, watching him run around, like Mick Ennis and those sort of people, it'd be it would be good, and it'd certainly get people watching. Yeah.
I think there would be an impulse towards a bit of novelty. I mean, I can't help but notice that, you know, the AFL might try its hand with this AFLX in the bye week before the finals. I think part of the problem, and I will say it actually is a problem and underline that word, is I think every sports administrator in Australia is in love with the idea of the success of the Big Bash.
Yeah.
And so everyone's trying to chase kind of that Big Bash style.
Yeah.
And I hate to say it, you know, maybe kind of like 22 to 26 rounds of club football has gotten a little stale, you know? So we've kind of got to find, you know, other avenues to kind of get people excited kind of about their sport.
Yeah, and especially works in the summer months too, those abbreviated forms. Stay tuned for some more flag football.
you can take that idea more part, you know, courtesy of us.
Yeah, there you go. And now we want to talk about Nathan Cleary, the bloke who's apparently not ready to represent New South Wales at State of Origin. Being a Penrith fan, I was very conflicted about how New South Wales went in the State of Origin. I was very cynical, as you know. I was cynical about our chances to start with. But also, I don't know, when you have State of Origin and it's supposed to include every single team in, you know, players across the state, there were no Penrith players in it. And I also noticed that there were no Parramatta players. So you had basically all of Western Sydney not represented at State of Origin. And if not this year, then I reckon next year Nathan Cleary would not only, he's ready in my opinion, that the kid himself has said he's not, but giving him another 12 months, he'll be 20. That's ripe. Like that's a good stage for entering Origin. And I just think, you know, on the weekend against the Warriors, he really proved that. Not only, you know, is he very composed, he's got all the skills, and he's a worthy selection, I thought. He scored a hat trick of tries and set up two more, and that was without Matt Moylan in the starting side for Penrith too. What are your thoughts? I mean,
I just think Nathan Cleary can't play Origin because all those fantasy players out there are going to revolt at losing him, not gaining kind of fantasy points during the week. He set a record for in the course of doing all those things in that match. He set a record for fantasy points in a single week.
So. He's 22 points ahead of the nearest try scorer in the real world. He's goal kicking is 22 from 23 for the season, 91%. That gives you an idea of if he's ready or not. He's obviously got a level head.
I think I said in a previous pod, if you really believe that you know, kind of he's the one, that he is going to be the long-term kind of playmaker for the Blues, go ahead, pick him. I can't see why you wouldn't do it. I know it is a big kind of signal of generational change. It also is a bit to put on a young guy. I've got a question in this regard for you, James. That, you know, do you think that part of the reason why they might be a bit gun shy about throwing kind of Cleary in is because and it kind of struck me kind of how similar kind of the parallels are. The situation that this most resembles, should, you know, kind of Nathan Cleary be indeed wearing the number 7 or the number 6 or what have you,
yep,
for New South Wales next year, is the guy he looks like most is when they threw Mitchell Pearce,
yep,
into a blue jumper when he was 19 years old.
Yeah. And fair enough. That's a knockout argument that you can't really deal with, is it? But other players, you know, you can go all the way through history. Brad Fittler, another bloke from Penrith. I think he was playing in a national footy at 18 and grand finals at 19. And it's really up to the individual, as far as mental composure goes. That's the sort of thing that looks like it has always spooked Pearce on that big level, the pressure.
Mm.
The pressure looks like it gets to him, whereas this young kid, I mean, you know, he's only played, 40, 50 NRL games. At this stage, he's looking very composed. And
I think what we got to bear in mind is that, I kind of just took a look back through a story I did with Mitchell Pearce a couple of years ago. And like the last thing he said, I included in my piece.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten about it, but it kind of hit home with me in a big way. Because I was asking him about those years when he got called up. He was playing in game three of 2008 was his call up.
Okay.
And the one thing he said was that, you know, when Freddie Fittler, is trying to tell you something at, 19 and 20 years old, you kind of say, yeah. And it only really kind of clicked with him like 4 or 5 years later.
Okay.
Yeah, so I guess the thing that when I look at the case of Cleary, or I kind of look at the case of any young player who you think is talented enough and,
yep,
got enough pedigree that they will be kind of the long-term solution, I think we tend to look at things backwards sometimes. We say to ourselves that, this guy is so talented, of course he will be a success, at Origin level or whatever level you ascend them to.
Yeah.
I think the point, the more kind of pertinent point is that you've kind of got to set them up to succeed. And like when there's an alternative universe, I reckon, out there in which Mitchell Pearce was a perfectly successful, New South Wales halfback. But if you inflict, 7 series losses on a guy, of course, I think if you inflict 3 series losses on a guy, I think, kind of results aren't going to turn out very well.
True.
So, chances are kind of Nathan Cleary walks into the side next year, they get a victory and it looks all golden. And maybe that first positive kind of result for him kind of leads him on to kind of great success.
Are you talking about like what happened when Laurie Daly was appointed coach? He came in and he won straight away.
Well, it can go the other way. But
yeah.
I often find that when you look at the course of sporting careers, there's not a straight line from a guy's talent to actually kind of how his career turned out. Sometimes what happens is there's kind of an event early in their career which is either kind of something that built them up or tore them down, and that's where it kind of, and that's how it kind of proceeded from there.
Sure.
So I don't know. I mean, I'll take it on faith that that Nathan Cleary kind of has the right stuff to be chosen. I mean, I'm fascinated with those guys who've kind of grown up around the game as he did. I think they're kind of really well adjusted to kind of take on those types of challenges. But having said all of that, I think Mitchell Pearce was once in this situation too.
Oh,
and look at how that has turned out.
Yeah, true. That's true. So we'll see what happens in 12 months' time when the selectors get out their clipboards again and sit down at the meeting table. Cool. All right, so now we're going to discuss our hero of the past 7 days in rugby league, and who's your hero, mate?
Yes, I really enjoyed this one over the weekend,
yeah,
because I'm a touch obsessed about it, as you came to learn on Monday morning. But the Canberra Raiders' Aiden Caesar basically set his team up for a very good victory at home over the past weekend, when in the opening sequence of extra time, He booted a 40-20, which then set up a very, very good kind of golden try.
What a play.
That was set up by an equally impressive, really, set up by a Dave Taylor offload.
Yeah.
But, I've always thought that, you know, kind of why teams don't try kind of like gambits with a 40-20 a bit more. I would love to see some kind of, you know, some numbers on it. I'm pretty sure people have run the stats about why you should do it or why you shouldn't do it.
Yep.
But, you know, it seemed like such an ingenious time to do it when you're kind of running back, you know, a kickoff from that kind of, from that first set in Golden Point. And, you know, if, say, the opposing fullback fields that ball and you don't kind of pull off the 40-20, you've kind of got the field position kind of switch,
so,
or you've kind of moved on to the next set. And if it comes off, well, yeah, you've basically put yourself in a terrific position to score, and not having given your own opponent even a chance to win the game. So
that was great.
I kind of lauded that that play. I'm curious kind of whether that was premeditated or whether it was just something. So he saw, you know, he really caught the St. George fullback. Who was it? I can't recall whether it was Jason Nightingale or whoever was lining up in the one. Yeah, it was just done so beautifully. Well, it was right out of the copybook, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was intelligent, wasn't it?
That way to win, how to win kind of like a rugby league match in extra time.
Yeah.
Apart from, of course, having taken the opening kickoff and counting on somebody else on the other team to drop it.
As the script is supposed to go. That's a really good choice, mate. Really good. And I'll pick up at the zero of the week. In the same game?
Same
team. Josh Papali's blatant shoulder charge was something that you think you're going to see less and less of these as these uncompromising rules are brought in. And then players just continuing to line up other players and shoulder charging them. I can't imagine that the hitman is a thing anymore in rugby league because it's only going to cost you a man. But people blowing up were quite right. Dugan goes off, Papali stays on the field, and it just doesn't seem fair, does it? Like he ended up with a 2-week suspension, but I do agree with the blow up about this. There is a bit of injustice about it. A player taking another player out and still being able to stay on. I don't know how they fix it. Maybe, you know, if a player's gone off, you know, a rugby league player doesn't go off the field for no reason. If a player's gone off, it's because they're injured. The other player should at least get 10 in the bin.
Mm.
I suggested on Twitter, maybe if the player doesn't come back onto the field, the injured player, then neither should that other player who committed the offence, but that sets up all sorts of opportunity for faking and that sort of thing, doesn't it?
Dare we say this sounds almost a bit too much like Sonny Bill Williams in the second Lions test?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's right. Yeah,
Shoulder charge, got sent off, swung the balance of the game, got blamed for his rugby league background for putting on the shoulder charge. You know.
It all escalated very quickly that one, didn't it?
Yeah, but fair point. Like you can, you know, imagine this happens one of these days in a finals match, and if it were to happen, say that you were to shoulder charge on say the opposing team's star player, and you end up with kind of one of those terrible kind of, you know, pawn for a bishop or pawn for a knight type exchanges. But I'm curious. I mean, is it so much in the DNA of kind of the way these guys play still? And, you know, it's easy enough that if you kind of come into the tackle and you don't get your arms up quickly and the way they kind of tackle that, you know, this will happen from time to time.
From time to time it will. Yeah, it just surprises you, though. It's been in the news for the last 3 or 4 years. Shoulder charges are not allowed anymore.
Mm.
And he seemed to have a lot of time in the lead-up to that play, in the lead-up to that incident, to see where Dugan was and what sort of situation he was in. And he got him a beauty. It was a great shoulder charge, but illegal. So he's going to sit on the sideline for the next 2 weeks. So there you go. We're going to talk about, we're going to preview round 20 of the NRL. This is the Women in League round. And kicking things off will be the Broncos versus Canterbury on Thursday at 7:50 up at Suncorp. Brisbane's in fourth spot and the Dogs are in 13th. They're really struggling. Their form line, Brisbane beat the Knights 34-22. Took them most of the game to get on top of the Knights, but they got there. and that was a week after they were flogged by the Storm. So they're in a not a bad patch, but they haven't been as good as they have been in the past sort of 2 months leading up to last week. The good news for Brisbane is Matt Gillette and Josh Maguire are back from Origin, and Thaiday moves to the bench, which he wouldn't be very happy about. The Bulldogs, they just beat Newcastle last start as well in Golden Point. They've got Brett Morris, Josh Jackson and David Clemmer all back. So that'll spice things up in the forward battle, having all these players back. I still see Brisbane easily winning this one. What do you reckon?
I took a look and kind of just a sweep through the numbers.
Yeah.
The Bulldogs' kind of scoring stats are really quite atrocious. It's stunning for a team kind of
that plays first grade.
Not for a team that plays first grade. I mean, kind of Wests and kind of Newcastle are kind of, if you kind of want to really look at them and kind of group them together, kind of it's in certain rates they're kind of there. We had this kind of thought about them from the start of the year that this is a side, well, particularly if you look at last season, they were a side that gained a lot of ground and had a lot of ball, but just did not score a lot of points. And I think the bottom has fallen out kind of again this year. I mean, with a lot of cases with Canterbury, it seems like, you look at them and think, they can't score enough to actually win games. And I can't help but, note that, there was the word going around again that, Dez's status is up in the air again. The Bulldogs chairman apparently is back from vacation, and now he's in put up or get out mode. It'll be interesting kind of to see how kind of where that goes, but I do wonder whether it's just kind of that Hasler style, whether they can kind of ever kind of get beyond that.
We'll see. I just think Brisbane will towel them up quite nicely there on Thursday. Friday night, beat the traffic game. This will be fun. The Roosters and Newcastle at Allianz Stadium at 6 p.m. on Friday. The Roosters have they're coming off a loss. Coming off a win over Souths last start, and before that they were flogged by the Storm. So they've got a little bit to prove. The Roosters are missing Michael Gordon with that pectoral injury, and Jake Friend is out with a hand injury. He's the big loss. Mm. He's the heart and soul of that team. Like, you can talk about Pierce and Keary all you like, but Friend is just the backbone of that side. He's a great player. Love watching him. And the Knights were beaten 34-22, as we said, by the Broncos. And the big thing with this game, SKD makes his debut for the Knights in front of the Roosters crowd.
The SKD ball.
This will be really interesting to see whether the Roosters boo him or clap in appreciation. I don't know. He was in really rough form leading up to his exit at the Roosters. Claims of feet for hands and all that sort of thing. And geez, this is I'm going to this game. I'm almost going to this game mostly for this reason, to watch this theatre play out.
My favourite thing from this game is that in conjunction with the Women in League round, the Roosters and their sponsors at Steggles, those fine chicken providers, full disclosure, my family business does do some work for Steggles, but that's by the by, they will wear kind of the names of kind of important women in the players' lives to on their jerseys. Make your jokes accordingly.
Come
on, James. You're dying, aren't you?
That's a lovely idea. It's a very sweet and lovely idea.
Some players, you only get one. They just want to remind some of the players on the field, you only get to nominate one.
Some people have, that's what Women in League Round is all about, to Cronulla's playing South Sydney on Friday as well, at 7:50 at Southern Cross, down in the Shire. Cronulla got toweled up in atrocious conditions last week by the Titans, 30-10. James Maloney's back though, so that should steady them up a fair bit. And Souths were beaten 23-10 by the Cowboys in Cairns. They've lost their last two. I just want to make one comment about that Souths game last week, watching it on television. Like, the DJ playing music in between the scrum feeds and the line dropouts, he was on fire.
They really were. They were playing a lot of... I actually noticed that as well. Yeah. They were playing a lot of music during that match.
But it was good too.
I don't know. It kind of had a feel of being like 90s NBL for me. Right. Like, you know, kind of playing... It's not, you know, kind of league. But, you know, I'm not going to knock the good denizens of Cairns. Like, you know, that's...
And they kept it going, didn't they? Like, normally, where some other DJ had cut it off after 5 seconds, they would, like, literally go right up until the ball left the halfback's hands. Like, yeah, I liked it. I just thought it was a fun aspect to the coverage.
Maybe that's what they need, you know, like, for each kind of kicker, when they're lining up a goal or a conversion, they should have their own kind of, like, theme music, yeah, you know, yeah. So it's, they can do that. So, like, you've kind of got... believe it's in Major League Baseball, they've got that walkout music when they go to bat. So maybe that's kind of the thing they need to do to kind of bring in the younger crowd.
Didn't help South win, though. It was their home game at Cairns. So
I don't get that. Like, it's a home game at Cairns, but you know, the other side gets to travel shorter. Like, I'd be complaining to the league that, you know, if this is going to be my home game, you got to send another team that's actually travelling further than we are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
not the side that can come here from 30 minutes down the road, or whatever. However far Townsville is from Cairns.
But it was good. I'm always bitching about these. There's too many games in Sydney.
Yes, yes.
Imagine that game at ANZ Stadium. There's Cowboys fans wouldn't have travelled down for that, and there aren't very many of them in Sydney. So it was a good. Good initiative.
And, you know, looking at the crowd out there, it looked fantastic.
Yeah, it was packed, wasn't it? Yeah. On Saturday, 3 p.m, the Panthers are playing the Titans at Pepper Stadium. This is the first of four games in a row for Penrith. They had a massive stretch there when they were on the road. Penrith's won their last two against the Warriors and Manly the week before. And the big boys are back, Moylan and Wallace for Penrith. But Trent Merrin is out with a knee injury for the season, so that's a massive blow. He was actually in really good form after being left out of Origin. The Titans have won three in a row, and they're in form as well. And an interesting thing that I saw, it's not rocket science or anything, but they've kept their opposition to 10 points in their last two games, so their defence is obviously improving every week. And that, the way that they really dug in those awful conditions last week, they could hardly play footy either side, but they seemed to handle them better than the Sharks, and that really...
There's a genuine surprise. You'd think that the team that kind of grinds as well as Cronulla does, you know, it'd be surprising that they'd would kind of be at a disadvantage in those type of conditions.
And the Dave joke of the week was, you'd think that the Sharks would handle the wet condition. Only 14 million people made that joke on Twitter during the game. So
I would. The one thing I'm going to say for this contest, I actually nominate this as the key contest of the round.
Okay. Like,
because, kind of just taking a look at kind of where we stand in the season.
Yeah.
We've got kind of like a tier of about seven sides that are probably chasing those last two finals.
Two spots, yeah.
And these are two of the teams in that tier, so it's kind of a thing where, you know, it's not just a matter of kind of winning games and trying to get to kind of that 12 win threshold that gets you to the finals. It's also kind of beating out your competition to get to those last two spots.
Yep.
And so in many respects, you know, when you're playing kind of like, you know, teams like Penrith or Gold Coast, it's not so much an issue of getting a win for yourself, but it's also putting a loss in your opposition.
Definitely.
Penrith wins this, they get two games ahead of Gold Coast, whereas, you know, I think the Titans win their draw level. So, you know, this is, we're entering that part of the season where games like this will kind of shape kind of the ladder. It'll shape the run for each of these teams in. So it'd be a good one. All wins are good to get. This one will be really good for either team to get.
No, great analysis there, mate. Yeah, for sure. Raiders are taking on the Storm at 5:30 p.m. on Saturday down at GIO in the nation's capital. The Canberra's come off a thrilling Golden Point win over Saints that Jeff was talking about before. And as we also said, Josh Papali won't be there. Massive loss for their forward pack. And their opponents were beaten 22-6 by Parramatta last up. But the Storm welcome back those six Origin players. So imagine this year, you're struggling. You've just been beaten by Parramatta, but you got Slater, Smith, Cronk, Chambers, Munster and Glasby. Oh, you guys can play this week. That's just
you've just been given half your side back.
Yeah. This should be it. I think Melbourne should be able to clean them up. Canberra are still down on confidence, aren't they? I thought
they are. I wanted to ask you, James. You actually had the opportunity to speak to Billy Slater during the week, I think we're kind of entering kind of a very pivotal period for one of the game's great players. I mean, the word has come out that he's going to make a decision over his playing future in the next month and a half.
Yeah.
What were you able to glean kind of from what he's saying? Which way do you think he's leaning? And how do you think kind of, you know, the shape of the rest of the season might influence his decision? I mean, plainly, you know, kind of he comes off that dream kind of Origin victory. I mean, if they were to kind of roll to the Premiership from here, do you think it might kind of sway him either way?
I think no matter what happens, he'll play again next year.
Right.
Just talking to him, he sounds very fresh.
Mm.
And he mentioned it five or six times how much he loves rugby league.
Just
unprompted. I didn't ask him about anything related to that, but he'd end his answers with, "I'm just so in love with the game." And you can't blame him because he's 32, 33 or however old he is. But, you know, he's 2 years behind everybody.
That's right.
He's still got a lot of good times to enjoy. And that announcement, I wouldn't be surprised if he retires from international footy maybe, gives Origin one more go next year and then maybe has another go, another year with Melbourne after that.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll be around for a little bit longer to come. He just, it sounds fresh, like his voice actually sounded enthusiastic and fresh.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a bit of a function of missing out those last 2 years. Like, if he'd maybe only missed one or missed kind of like portions of another and then missed one, he might kind of be inclined to go, is my sense. But I think because he was made to miss it, as long as he's upright, as long as he's physically good, like I couldn't help but notice when he's told the Courier Mail that mentally he's all there, which is always kind of a good sign. It's just a question of whether, you know, if he's kind of feels like he's physically capable by the end of the year. I wouldn't be surprised to see him go again. I guess the only kind of danger in that regard is, you know, it's going to be kind of a long run to the end of the year because you expect they're going to be right in it, maybe even to the very last game, and then there's another kind of, there's a World Cup campaign after that. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, stay safe, Billy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I hope he does hang around. I hope we're right and doesn't break our hearts and exit the game. So the next game is Saturday night, 7:30 at 1300 Smiles. It's the Cowboys up against the Warriors. The Cowboys now won three in a row without JT.
Here it comes.
So there you go. It's like in Happy Gilmore, when Happy Gilmore learns to putt. Everyone goes, uh-oh, well, they've learned to win without JT. So it's good times for the Cowboys, I think. Their opponent really, you know, should be four wins on the trot here. Because Sean Johnson, their halfback, is out with a knee injury. Here's one for you. I thought you'd like this one. Sean Johnson's half replacement, Mason Lino. His real name is Gustav. How awesome would that have been to have Gustav in the NRL?
That's a missed opportunity. That's a real missed opportunity.
That would have been cult hero right there, wouldn't it?
So his name is Gustav, what, Mason Lino?
Gustav Lino.
Gustav Lino.
Yeah.
Where does the Mason come from?
I think he just changed it to that.
He picked it.
Yeah.
This is not some kind of, I'm a Willie Mason fan and I just decided to honour him and I'll call myself.
Oh, no, I don't know, maybe. I don't know where that part comes from. But Gustav, we need more of them in the NRL. That would have been hilarious.
That is a real missed opportunity.
Do you have anything to say about this game? No, this should be.
My mind has been blown by the missed opportunity, Gustav.
I knew you'd love.
I think we need to start a campaign to just if he comes in and he kind of sticks in the league. Yes, just tell him to come back next year as Gustav Lino.
I hope I'm right. The NRL team list guys said that yesterday, and I thought it was hilarious. I think that's going to be a massive win of the Cowboys. That one, it's only going to give them more confidence. And Sunday's matches, Dragons up against Manly. Dragons have, before this game at 11:45 a.m., we're going to have the Women's Interstate Challenge between New South Wales and Queensland. It's a huge game, this one. Ruwan Sims and the like, they'll all be there. It's basically an all-star women's rugby league match to highlight.
Who does she play for?
Cronulla.
No. Which state?
New South Wales.
All right.
Yeah.
Which one of her brothers doesn't? Tariq.
I don't know.
Can never figure out.
It's like herding cats. So I don't
Corbin
know.
Or Corbin and Tariq are on opposite sides of the border, if I understand correctly.
Oh, I've lost
you,
track of
you
them.
Know that? All right.
Yeah. I only know about Ruwan.
I was curious. That is what I am waiting for the Sims boys to make origin, and then it won't be just mate against mate. It'll actually be brother against brother, which I think is hilarious.
Well, yeah, there's no rule against that.
There's not. In fact, the rules might even reinforce the fact that you can play, your origin like on different sides of the, for two brothers.
There you go. Yeah. So that'd be a good curtain raiser to this game. It kicks off at 2 o'clock. The Dragons and Manly. Dragons they've lost their last two, and their win before their losing run was over Newcastle. So they're just in a real they're battling at the moment. Although they do have Frizzell and Ewan Aitken back. Manly bounced back with a 28-16 win over the Tigers last week. Api Korosau and Matt Wright are out injured, so that might level it up a little bit. But I still expect Manly to grab the points down in Wollongong.
It's a question for you.
Yeah.
Should the situation about the alleged kind of off-field issues that Manly is having...
Oh, yeah, with the salary cap.
Yeah, with the salary cap. Would you be surprised if it doesn't hurt them kind of on the field one bit? It's like what we were saying earlier, that they might go in a siege mentality up there and they actually might play better.
It doesn't seem to affect them at all, does it?
It doesn't really right now. I get the sense that I wouldn't be surprised if this kind of turns out to be one of those galvanizing things.
Yeah.
No, that actually helps them play better through the end of the year. I mean, I really pretty much underrated them all year. Because our good friend and kind of resident Manly man Anthony Brand wrote them off in week two, and they've since kind of come back to spite him in the biggest way.
Indeed.
So I've quit kind of doubting them. Yeah. So I really do think that as that situation might get worse, not that I have any special insight into it, they actually might keep on playing better.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But it just goes to show what disconnect there is sometimes between the players and the board. Like,
it's true.
I don't think that
in the long run, I don't think you can avoid that. That's a gravity that eventually drags you down. But because it's just such a distraction. But it's funny how in the short term, particularly if the players kind of feel good about where they're at, kind of in their game, they can really defy kind of what's going on around them. It's interesting.
Just do their job. Turn up and do their job. I think Manly's going to win that one. I'll back them. And finally, the Tigers versus the Eels at ANZ Stadium on Sunday. I don't really have much to say about the Tigers. I can't think of anything to say. They lost to Manly. That's just another loss. But the Eels, they've won three in a row, and they're building confidence with each week. I didn't expect Parramatta to get the points here.
They look like of that group of tier of teams I was talking about chasing kind of the two final spots. They're really in the box seat. I mean, they're on 10 wins already. I mean, they could pretty much fall flat on their face.
Well, they need four more wins, you say?
Only a couple, really. I mean, you wouldn't want to go kind of into the finals winning two of your last seven, but that's pretty much all they might need. Interesting kind of, they've still sport a negative differential, which I think is always a very good long indicator of quality. But I would think the Eels, I don't know how they not make it really from here. I was almost tempted really not to say that they're part of that tier of sides kind of chasing. I mean, they got one huge advantage. Six of their last seven are at ANZ. They only have to leave Homebush for one game on the way into the finals, and that's a trip up to Suncorp to play Brisbane. So
that is a big advantage.
I guess the implication for that is, it really means probably seven out of the eight spots of the finals are set.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You know, it's going to be a tight race for yeah, for anybody who wants to play finals footy this year.
Dragons looking over their shoulder every day, aren't they?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, there's a few teams that want their spot. Yeah, so that wraps up round 20 of the NRL. And you wanted especially to kick off our World Cup countdown with a few results updates from an exciting lower tier of international footy.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. I mean, we in Inside Sport will be kind of involved in the World Cup quite heavily going towards the end of the year. So we've kind of added this kind of a regular update to Dead in Goal. So
yep.
As part of kind of the League World Cup, not only are we kind of deciding kind of the game's highest international honor, I mean, it's being decided at many other kind of levels. And we had this festival of World Cups event over the past weekend, in which we saw kind of teams play in competitions related to the defense forces, the women's defense force kind of grade, and then also kind of the universities. And a fair number of really interesting results came out of that. In the defense force kind of competition, very interesting. Fiji kind of pulled off an upset victory over Australia in the final, 44-12. So
yeah,
don't mess with the Fiji military. And people in Fiji will tell you that. On the women's defense force side, Australia beat New Zealand 16-12.
Wow. Yeah.
And in the universities division, Australia were kind of able to win there as well, defending a title that they'd won kind of in 2013, beating a very game Pacific Island kind of unis team 30-12. And just a note about that Pacific Islands team, that was a magnificent effort, considering that they kind of only came into the event late because the New Zealand uni side had to withdraw. So,
right.
And they were able to get past all the other nations. I think Ireland, England, Scotland, and sixth team just escapes me. But they did magnificently well to make it through to the final. And we're credit to their coach, a favorite of yours, a Panther partisan of yours, Tony Pulatua. So yeah, great effort from the Pacific Islands team.
No, that's great. Aren't those isn't that Festival of World Cup? You know, it's a good initiative. It just only attracts interest to the game.
We're going to see. I mean, there's some magnificent stories, kind of really, really out of that, which we hope to kind of be able to focus on towards the end of the year.
Oh, that'd be good.
And yeah, there's all kinds of kind of like levels of the game that will kind of be involved in kind of the World Cup. I understand there's various other representative type fixtures leading into the event. So. I think you and I have kind of discussed this in our overview, kind of preparing for the Rugby League World Cup, very underrated event in the sense of kind of how old it is. It's heritage. So I think we're going to try to make the effort to see if we can kind of boost the appreciation of that over the next few months.
Good stuff. Always. Was it good to focus on the history of league? Yeah, so, and speaking of, this week's Rearview Mirror, we're going to dedicate to the Women in League round. And my first thought for a woman in league who has been around for years and years and who fits into the Rearview Mirror category would be Tina Turner. She was she wasn't really involved in the game, but she was used as the figurehead of the promotion of the game in the mid-80s and early 90s. But the main one I wanted to focus on was a woman, I think her name was Mary Latch. Mary, in 1980 at Leichhardt Oval, round one, Balmain versus Parramatta. Parramatta getting hammered in the penalty count. The referee on that day was Greg Hartley. Rather than just boo from the sideline and get all grumpy and mopey that her team is losing the penalty count and probably the game. I don't actually know who won this, but Mary decides to jump the fence and run right up to Greg Hartley and just absolutely abuse him to his face in the middle of the field. What a heroic effort. that's doing something about it, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, I guess one of the regrettable things about social media these days is you just vent on Twitter. You won't do that anymore. It's one thing technology's taken away.
And she was even too good for the security. She was able to give him a 30-second spray before the security even came and got her. And it wasn't even
security felt the same way.
It wasn't even security that took her off. It was actually one of the Parramatta players grabbed her by the arm and took her away. I've got a passage here. It doesn't go for too long. I found it on the website One Eyed Eel, and it was written in 2010 by somebody called Bronnie. And she said, and there was a discussion about this incident back in 2010 on this website, and someone called Bronnie has written, her name is Mary. She's always been a huge Para fan. She felt Greg Hartley was penalising Para unfairly, so she decided to tell him what she thought of him. She told him he was a cheat who hated Para, and he better stop picking on them and be fair. There may have been a few swear words mixed in there too. She always said she'll do it again. So there you go.
We forlornly await the return of Mary then.
That'd be great, wouldn't it? Well, how quickly would you get thrown off the field by the security if that happened today?
It's one of my gripes about modern sport. I think, you know, I was watching some kind of footage of the NBA in the 1980s and watching them all storm the court after the final. I understand why they don't allow it to happen anymore.
Yep.
Very dangerous for the players, and not really good for the ground. But you know, I do think things like that have kind of almost reinforced the separation I think that we feel from the players these days. And we, they get paid so much and get treated to a level of kind of service and so forth that I think kind of really isolates, not only them from us, but us from them. I think that. This is not a call for things to return to the way they were, but I don't know. I think that sense, that sense of distance is really out there. And every time I see something like, there was another thing I was looking at the other day about Carlton in the VFL in the early 80s that had it was kind of another kind of pitch invasion story. It is so anomalous kind of these days and is viewed as such a transgression that I think it has created kind of an isolation kind of on both sides of if only in the mind on both sides of the fence.
Oh mate, yeah, for sure. Well said. And just before we go, we've got another cracking issue on sale on Thursday, our August 2017 edition. Mate, did you just want to run through some of the feature subjects? You've put together a good edition and some very timely subjects, isn't there? So,
well, thank you, James. I guess the theme of this edition we can say is has to do with a lot of kind of young talent on the rise across our football coast. Judd Danaher is our cover subject.
He plays that other game.
He plays that other game, but he is a New South Welshman. Well, his famed family. Are from this side of the border, from that side of the kind of the New South Wales Victoria border.
The wall.
So claim Joe Danaher. Yeah, quickly, star on the rise. But other young talents, kind of from a league perspective, we got to speak to Valentine Holmes, a guy who's encountered some very quick success in the NRL and in league in general. Almost really kind of emblematic of the new age kind of NRL star, kind of very interesting kind of to talk to him. Another kind of footballer on the rise, already our kind of most expensive kind of soccer player, Aaron Moy. Kind of plenty interesting reading around that. For kind of league types out there, also can commend to you, we have a book extract from David Hill, and it talks about his time as president of the North Sydney Bears. So that's a fun nostalgia trip for those of you kind of who may kind of be Bear partisans from back in the day. And I also have my story for this month was on injury prevention. injury prevention in kind of what teams are doing to try to prepare for, you know, kind of those for the big hurt. Really, now these days, it's one of those things that we used to think it was all about luck or lack of luck, as it were. And you know, these days teams can know how to prepare for it. And one of kind of the really interesting people I spoke to kind of in the writing of that story is a guy with a very deep kind of background in rugby league, a member of the Broncos staff for many years, a guy named Tim Gabbett, who might be familiar to kind of league junkies. Who were familiar kind of with some of the back rooms, whose knowledge extends to some of the back rooms around the game. So
yeah,
that's all in the edition coming out this Thursday.
Yeah, terrific. Very good. All right, so I'm getting to that, and also getting to round 20 of the NRL. It's going to be a huge one. Thanks very much for joining us this week.